the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
There's been a lot of talk about tokenized financial assets and how this will revolutionize the world of investing. A tokenized asset is where a share, a piece of real estate, or a bond is converted into a digital form and stored on a blockchain. Think of it as a digital certificate of ownership. It allows you to own a tiny piece of a stock, a bond, a waterfront property, or a work of art. The reason people are excited about tokenization is that it has the potential to bring trillions of dollars worth of real-world value onto the blockchain and all the benefits that come with that: security, transparency, and reduced costs compared to the buying and selling of traditional assets. Assets that previously were difficult to acquire or even to value now have a potential market. The global real estate market is reckoned to be worth about $400 trillion, but only a small percentage of people or companies have the capital to participate in it. Tokenization looks set to change that by making it possible for ordinary people to get involved by buying tiny fractions of a property. The same goes for financial assets. Mesh.Trade is a digital capital markets platform for issuing and investing in capital market assets. It recently became the first licensed crypto asset service provider, or CASP, in Africa to tokenize real financial assets. Earlier this year, it raised 100 million rand for the issue of Africa's first tokenized corporate bond called DMOS, a 10-year prime plus 2% floating bond. Well, we're joined now by Connie Bloom, who is the founder and MD of Mesh.Trade. Welcome, Connie. Good to talk to you, and thanks for your time. I think a good place to start is why tokenized financial assets are such a big deal around the world. Maybe explain the importance of tokenization and how you see it transforming the financial sector.
I think tokenization is important for two main reasons. We currently are seeing a capital markets that is becoming more and more exclusive. So that means that you need to have higher and higher amounts of money to participate in it. You just mentioned the property industry and how few people actually have the capital to enter into this market and buy a piece of property. And the same problem statement stands for the capital markets. We're starting with a capital markets that is inaccessible, it's incredibly onerous, and then it's also hard to trade in it because it's a complex kind of asset classes. Now, tokenization comes in and fundamentally changes the way that the capital markets functions by giving back to the issuers and the investors the ability to directly trade with each other. So reducing the amount of intermediary services that are associated with it, but also reducing the amount of infrastructure and advisory services that is required to enter into a single trade. So generally, when we look at this problem statement, there's around 20 to 40 intermediaries involved in any single trade. And that is quite shocking because you think you're always just trading with one person on the other side, and that's actually not true. Then on the other side, we have all these interesting assets in the world. You just mentioned the bond that we brought out into the market. And I genuinely like to bring up the example of how cool would it have been for you to invest into Apple when we all thought it was a fruit company. Now, tokenization actually brings it forth that we can invest in these interesting companies, these entrepreneurial ventures, at an earlier stage by reducing the amount of capital that is the minimum threshold for us to step into it, but also opening it up to a wider range of investors. So no longer is this market just exclusive for certain people or certain businesses, but fundamentally everyone can step into it and then participate as well.
I mentioned earlier that you raised $100 million, and you just touched on that. That's a very interesting and sizable project to get involved with, and that was by way of a tokenized bond issue. Tell us about DMOS, the bond. What's the money for, and how are you able to find investors so quickly? Because this is one of the big things about starting up. You've really created your own marketplace, so where do you get the liquidity?
I think this is one of the most interesting value propositions when it comes to Mesh. Now, DMOS, to create some context around this company, this fantastic partner to us, they are a network of schools. So what they do is they go out and they roll out their educational model by purchasing schools or building new schools in their kind of network. So the 100 million that they raised is going to building 12 new schools in their network. And what they came to us with is saying, we want to access our community base as well. So we don't just want the corporates, the institutions, the banks to participate in our raise, but we also have a lot of people going to our schools. We have a lot of parents investing and sending their children to be educated here. So why can we not include them in our market? And we said, absolutely, that's why you came to Mesh. This is fundamentally what we do. We include everyone in a capital raise. We believe that the capital market should be easy to use, transparent, and accessible. So what we did is we looked at this initiative, this 100 million, and as you mentioned, we put it onto a bond. But not only did we put it onto a bond, we also registered a prospectus against that bond. So making sure that it's fully regulatory compliant, but still very lightweight from a legal perspective. But fundamentally, what was the biggest point around this is we took that minimum investment amount that's generally on bonds, which is 1 million rand, and we reduced that to 5,000 rand per contract. Now, when we sell assets out into the market, we don't just think that when we put it out onto the internet, onto our lovely website, that people are automatically going to find it and invest in it. We still know that you have to sell these assets to people. And Mesh, being a platform, we are very flexible, we're very quick, and we utilize all digital channels to go to market. And in a few weeks' time, so we ran around 6 weeks in the market, we could actually find all those investors and find that amount of money to successfully raise the 100 million for Demorse. And we utilized all the digital tools in our arsenal, from our platform to digital marketing to videos to YouTube to podcasts, to make sure that people are aware of this asset and can actually invest in it as well.
I mean, it's quite an achievement, because if you look at raising 100 million, there must have been some attraction there for the investors. Give us a little bit of insight into the terms of this bond. What kind of yield are you offering?
So this bond is a 10-year prime plus 2% yielding bond, and it also pays a quarterly coupon. So what makes that interesting is your asset gets serviced over its full life cycle. So when you invest into it, you know that every quarter you're going to get a little bit of money coming back to you. With that, it is also a fully guaranteed bond. So that makes sure that when you are investing into the Demorse, that their business model is also de-risked because there's a guarantor on that bond. Effectively, that means that if anything ever were to happen to them, which we all hope that it won't, but if there was to be an event, they have someone in the form of Tucker that can actually step in and make the investor whole again. So it's a very attractive return with a de-risked metric as well on the company side.
You mentioned there Die Tucker. To explain that, is that the guarantor of the bond?
Tucker is an investment corporation, and they were both the underwriter and the guarantor on this bond.
Interesting. Okay, I take it there are other tokenized financial assets that you've got in the pipeline. Give us a taste of what we can expect in the future from Mesh Trade.
Absolutely. Mesh just obtained its FSP license, and to celebrate this, we are planning to roll out a few very, very interesting projects. The first one that is coming up is now at the end of July, we have a preference share coming to market. Now, a preference share is something that retail clients have almost never had access to. It's generally an instrument that is used by banks to fund their balance sheets, but we have now brought it to market with this very special client of ours that is going to market on the 29th of July. After that, we bring forth a couple of funds and property funds as well, to bring forth a collection of assets that are very interesting for our investors to invest in, but that they can also not find anywhere else.
I'm interested to find out how you find these investors. This is an entirely new concept, I'm sure, for people, the big fund managers and people like that. Are these the people that you're appealing to, or is it a different market altogether?
So we're appealing to two sides of the market. At the start, you mentioned that Mesh is a platform. We're also a multi-sided platform. That means that we serve people looking for capital in the market, so we call them issuers, and then we are also serving investors. So on our investor side, we are looking for everyone from a retail individual up towards institutional clients. We are available for everyone, and we can also serve everyone. But where we find them and how we find them is also an interesting approach that we take to market. From a business model perspective, all platform businesses generally have a problem statement that they call the cold start problem. Now, the cold start problem basically says, what do you start out with? Do you start with a client first, or do you start with a product first? And how do you get that to move? And in our world, it's no different. So what we did is we started out with a lovely bond called the Morse, and we acquired an investor base around that. But every asset that we bring out to market, we actively market that, but also we have our business pulling in new investors into it on a daily basis. So we very specifically target certain investors around certain asset classes and what we know that they would most likely like to invest into. So currently our drive is very much towards our institutional clients, our professional investors, but also our retail clients. I believe that every asset that we bring out into the world must have retail clients investing into them.
Talk about the retail side. Is there a minimum investment required? Because tokenization allows for almost infinite fractionalization of an asset. So I imagine that this is one of the attractions that smaller investors can get involved. And I would imagine, if you're offering a prime plus 2% bond, which is guaranteed, that pension funds, too, would like to look at that.
So it depends, huh? It's a random answer to give, but it definitely depends on who the issuer is and what kind of investor they're looking for investing into the assets. But from a Mesh perspective, we like to keep that minimum as low as possible, not to keep the bigger investors out. Because the bigger investors utilizing our platform, they don't need to worry about how small our contract sizes are. We do everything for them. But for the lower value investor, we saw with the Morse bond, we took a minimum value of 5,000 Rand on it. For the preference share that we have coming up, there's a minimum value of 10,000 Rand. But we can effectively bring out assets that have as little as 1 Rand or 1 cent investment on it. A lot of the funds that we have on platform and the currencies that we also have on platform are fully fractionalized as well. So you can go in with a minimum value of around a cent to buy one of these. And this is one of the powers of tokenization, is that it is actually affordable to buy such a small component of an asset.
Okay, talk about how you came to create Mesh.Trade and what's your background?
I have a very interesting background to come to this side of the market. I've always loved the financial industry, but I've been frustrated by it. So my background is that I studied industrial engineering, and to shift out of a more traditional world of manufacturing and supply chain into the financial industry, I studied a postgraduate in financial engineering. And during my time, I was working in the banks and working for the company that I was in at that stage. And we were implementing big treasury and trade systems. And although we made these banks and asset managers more efficient and more effective and more affordable for their clients, there was no fundamental change actually happening across the industry. There were still those 20 to 40 intermediaries. Your fees were still incredibly high because people were disconnected from each other. And I saw these banks trade in the most wonderful instruments that I just wished as a normal individual that I could also invest in them. I saw companies coming through venture capital and private equity funding, and I just wished that I could also be part of their journey of growth, investing into them or just being able to follow them along. And these asset classes weren't open for us. And I just started asking why. Why can only certain people invest into certain assets? Why can we not make it open for more people? Why can't pension funds invest in assets that are not Reg 28 or Board Notice 90 covered? And not saying any of these things are wrong, just asking why, understanding how these things come together. And that is where we started creating Mesh, because we started to see a problem statement emerging in the market, a problem statement of where you have this disparity of access happening. And this is by no means a democratization of the capital markets kind of play, but it is definitely saying that if we have a market that is easy to access, more transparent, and simple to use, we have more people participating in the capital markets that can actually fundamentally stimulate economical growth, something that South Africa needs a lot of. But also South Africa sits with this incredibly dynamic entrepreneurial base. People making plans after plan after plan. We've seen it happening. My one favorite example of this is saying that we have an insuring company in South Africa where they saw that they were paying out a lot of claims on potholes. And what did they do? They did not decide to complain. They started the pothole patrol. And I thought that was incredibly innovative. This is but one example of what South Africans are truly known for. And the principle around Mesh is saying that if we can stimulate this entrepreneurial base and make it open for more and more investors, we would have a more dynamic capital markets that is growing. And that was the basis for us to start out and build what is now Mesh.
It's interesting that you raise the point there about private equity and joint venture businesses, which really are not accessible in a large way to the ordinary retail investor. And then you have a lot of entrepreneurs who are looking for funding, and it's a big complaint that they go to the banks and it takes them months, and there's a huge amount of credit approval that's got to be done, and oftentimes it's not successful. Do you see this as being something that you are capable of changing, bringing this kind of capital access to entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. I look at the market and I see a market that is onerous and expensive and difficult to understand. And Mesh has been built for entrepreneurs. And when I say it's been built for entrepreneurs, I don't mean that I'm excluding the big banks and the insurance companies, the people already like listed, or I'm only looking at people just getting started out in the market, looking for like that first seed capital to grow. I'm looking for people that are business owners and are keen to grow their ventures. That is what I define to be an entrepreneur. So we can actually stimulate this market, because you are absolutely correct. When you go out to market, you have a couple of choices of where you can raise capital. You mentioned the loan approach. Then you can go and you can list your capital, or you can go to venture capital or private equity. But there is definitely this middle segment in the market that is underserved, which Mesh is targeting actively. And this is the entrepreneurial segment. And what we're looking at for this segment is to create a market where they don't maybe have the appetite to go with the onerous requirements that is needed for you to be a listed company. You're looking for a quick and secure way to a capital line, but you're still wanting to have good, robust regulatory compliance in that, but a light legal structure. With investors that are really keen to invest in an asset like yours, if it's debt or equity or some kind of interesting structure around it, I keep on referring back to your property example of earlier, but we showed that we can and have create a value proposition for these clients. And this is what we're actively doing. We've proved that with the Morse. We will prove that again with our next asset coming up, and we'll keep on proving it and keep on growing the segments of the market.
So if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm looking for capital and I'm listening to this podcast, I could come to you. How quickly, assuming that you think that I do have a good business idea and there's a genuine return and a genuine business behind that, how quickly could you raise capital for me, and in what form would it be? Could it be by way of a bond? Would it be preference shares? Would it be equity? What would it be?
So generally, when you go out to market and raise capital, it can take you anything from 9 months to 12 months by rule of thumb, can take you even longer. It all depends on the quality of your business and the quality of the investors that you're looking for. So currently, we are servicing our clients in under 3 months. So it is still a process to go through because we make sure that for our investors that this company is robust. We make sure that there's good quality legal requirements behind it, but also we are a regulated financial services provider. So we make sure that there's also regulatory compliance around it. And it can go quicker than 3 months if your business is ready for it. Generally, my rule of thumb is around that. And we can find you investors, or you can bring your own, and then it can be even quicker. So really depends on what you need. We are a very tech-driven company. We are fintech first or product first. So when you come to us, we have a conversation with you. You can actually sit down and chat to a human, and we take a look at your business. We take a look at what your needs are, and we work with you to get you to market as quick and as easy as possible.
Now, you're really, in a sense, competing with the JSE, are you not? Why would somebody come to you rather than the stock exchange? You kind of answered that. There's a long process involved if you're going to list on the stock exchange. 12 months, maybe more. You can do it in 3 months. That's your rule of thumb. That's going to be very interesting for a lot of people. But are you going to be cheaper? Do you have the same kind of regulations that cover stock exchange listed companies? And additionally, is there a secondary market? If I'm holding, tokens in Demos, how quickly can I sell out?
Being a digital business, so I didn't use that 3 months as a rule of thumb, but my challenge to my team is to see how quickly we can do it. I would love to get an asset out into the market in 2 weeks' time. So I'm inviting any entrepreneurs that would like to take that chance with me and see whether we can actually do it. I believe it may be possible. But you mentioned in your question, how are we different or how are we similar as well? So when you look at the capital markets, there is a place for everyone and there's a reason for them all to exist. And when I look at the venues that you have in the market, you have your listed venues and they're there for a very specific reason. There is a regulatory construct for the JSE to look after, but we're not here to compete with them per se. We are taking care of this entrepreneurial segment of the market that wants to get to market quickly, wants to be regulatory compliant, and wants to have a capital markets that is easy to access, transparent and simple to use. And we're looking for our investors as well, our investors into alternative and private capital assets as well. So we service that segment and I hope to be growing into the board notice 19 Reg 28 segment as well. So to be servicing those pension funds, those provident funds, people investing any kind of pension kind of money quite soon, given our regulatory compliance now as well. But we've created a very dynamic part of the market. On top of that as well, Mesh is a global company. We are registered within the Netherlands. Currently, we are operating in South Africa, but we're also expanding into the UK and European market as well. And coming forth with the blockchain technology that we have, we can actually simulate global trade as well without you having to go between different entities and different exchanges as well. So make sure that we cover the regulatory compliance and capital can just flow and investors and issuers can deal with each other. That is a very big, big benefit that comes to the market by utilizing the services that Mesh has to offer.
Final question, what kind of assets are you most interested in tokenizing? Will you cover, for example, real estate? Could you tokenize shares already listed on the stock exchange? You know, could you go to Naspers and tokenize those shares? Tell us about that.
So the use case that falls under tokenization and especially something called real-world asset tokenization is as broad as what the sun can set on. So we have had to focus as a company. So even though from a technology point of view, we can tokenize mostly everything, we don't profess to do that. We don't profess to be everything to everyone. So we focus very much on capital markets and financial markets assets. Our speciality is within the debt classes, the equity classes, the fund classes, the commodity classes are very, very interesting for us. We like things like carbon and gold, silver, cattle. We like those kind of asset classes. When it comes to property, we are starting to dip our toes slightly into that space, but more from a financial angle. Not that much on tokenizing the actual property unless there is a capital requirement associated with it. So those are the kind of asset classes that we can service. And the big reason for us to keep our focus in those spaces is, as a business, we serve three main components in our market. We look at the issuance and tokenization of assets. We look at the trade of it. So both primary and secondary market are available on all our assets. And then we do a third component that is very unique for in our market, is we also manage these assets. But what that effectively means is we service it across its full life cycle. So we effectively have taken the capital markets and we've compressed it into a single elegant flow. So as an example, on a bond, when a coupon payment comes up, we service that. We calculate it, we pull the ownership records, and we make sure that the issuer pays their investors. The same with a dividend. We can service that flow of dividends as well. So every asset that we tokenize, we also make sure that we can service it across its life cycle. And all of these kind of assets have a legal requirement behind them, because you have to always ask yourself, what am I truly buying when I'm buying these assets? It's even more true when you're buying a financial asset. Go look at, are you buying the economic rights? Are you buying the legal rights, the ownership rights, and so forth as well on these assets? So when we look at our asset classes, financial focus first, and then we tokenize the actual assets. So our tokens are a bond, are equity, are pref share. And then we can also do pointer assets. And this is your second example that is said, if an asset is already listed on, let's say, the JSE or the London Stock Exchange or the New York Stock Exchange, we can also create an asset that points towards them, and you can still have exposure to those assets. But always take a look at the legal contracts behind it. Make sure that you understand, as an investor, what you're buying. There should always be a legal agreement associated with it, and you should completely understand where your capital is, where the risks are, and what your rights and obligations are associated with these assets as well.
So if you were to tokenize, for example, NASPERS, would you require the permission of NASPERS, or could you run a derivative completely independent of them, or rather like a contract for difference, and just let it run on the market, where you're not buying any underlying right in the company, or any, you've got no claim on the dividends or the company assets, but you're just buying price movements?
So yes, we can do that. But what we still like to build into these kind of assets is to make sure that there is a claim towards the underlying asset. So if you own a whole token, you can actually claim that whole share lying in a custody account as well. I think it's important, especially when it comes to stablecoin-like assets, that you know where that custody is. So if you really want to take ownership of your NASPERS lying underneath, then you can do it. So as a company, yes, we can do that. We have done it, not for NASPERS specifically. The only restriction that really comes in here is if we want to use those companies' brands. So this is also why we like to approach them directly and tie up a partnership with them, like we have done with Efficient and some of their funds that they have listed on our platform. Where we have the right to market some of them. Yes, that is Darby Roots Group.
Darby Roots, yeah.
Yes, and where we have the right to also market these assets, because that is very important for our company, to make sure that we can also honor the original assets and the original listers of those assets, because we believe that we can be a true channel for them to market as well.
Okay, so I guess in a sense you really are operating an exchange with a listings department, if you can call it that. So if a company misbehaves, you might have to delist them.
So we can't claim the term exchange. In South Africa, the term exchange is a regulatory term, and there's very big differences between the people operating under the FMA as an actual exchange and Mesh operating under the phase license, which we have, which we have a service provision license. So we are a trading platform license. And we mentioned earlier in our pre-conversation that Mesh has a Category 1 and Category 2 CASP intermediary license. So that means that we are operating a marketplace effectively. So we can trade some of these assets. We do have some responsibilities when it comes to the quality of the listings of our assets, but we don't have the regulatory oversight requirements like the JSE and exchanges do have. So when it comes to our platform, it's a lot quicker, but the responsibility still lies with the company and the investor to make sure that these are good quality companies that they're investing into and that the issuer still keeps on disclosing all their assets. I mentioned at the start that we like having good quality legal agreements on top of it. But this is also why prospectus documents are so important, because we know that we're operating in a regulatory framework. So SIPC in South Africa is the regulatory body that oversees companies and what they are allowed to and not allowed to do. And therefore, when you have a prospectus registered at SIPC, our investors also know that they have the appropriate legal coverage under the South African regulatory framework to invest safely into these kind of assets.
All right, we're going to leave it there. That was Connie Bloom, CEO and co-founder of Mesh.Trade. Thanks, Connie, very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.